you're interacting with a lot of contracting officers that are very dedicated employees as well as contractors that are trying to do the right thing on it. But there's a lot of confusion right now, it seems, on what is the right vehicle to use. There seems to be a tremendous transition of individuals where we have new contracting officers who are fairly inexperienced in it. They're getting their sea legs in this and trying to determine what level of risk can they take in interpreting some of these rules from the FAR. I think it's an interesting time of transition. As I talk to contractors, some of them will say, it seems like we have a lot of new faces that are coming in, that we seem to know the FAR better than they do. Then we have some other experienced people and trying to get to them to say, how do we navigate this?
That issue of new people, the acquisition workforce, has been a big issue. This administration, the last administration, has really put some focus around it. Is that a big concern for you in terms of making sure the right people are trained and they can do their job the best? Or is that maybe a piece to a broader issue?
No, I think that is the essential issue. We get the best value for the taxpayer when the contracting officer and the people that are involved in it know completely, have confidence in what they're doing, can look at all the different vehicles, can make good choices. We have to allow that contracting officer to be able to look at it, make a good, wise decision. They are the voice for the taxpayer at that point. And if they make a wrong decision based on they just didn't know other options, or they were painted into a corner and this is the only thing that they could do, then we're not going to get best value. So there is no one contracting vehicle that's out there saying if we did all contracts in that vehicle, we'll get best value. That just doesn't exist. Each contract is different. And so the contracting officer's got to have some latitude. But I think what's happened is we've had some money that's been lost in the process, which is going to happen. We need to reduce it, though. We've had some money lost in the process. Some people make a wrong decision. So to keep someone else from ever doing anything wrong, we're going to paint them all into a corner and force them into one or two particular vehicles when other vehicles may be better. So that just comes down to training. That comes down to letting them loose and having well-equipped people.
So you bring up two things that I want to touch upon. Number one, the idea of money, the idea of training. The administration has pushed forward several ideas around an acquisition training fund. The last administration has tried that too. But again, it's kind of hit some roadblocks. What can your subcommittee do? What can you do as the chairman of the subcommittee to kind of educate your fellow congressmen, educate your fellow committee members to say, hey, don't slice this out when obviously cuts are coming, but this is more important because this is the idea of, you know, spend a little to save a lot.
Right. It's the penny wise, pound foolish concept to say, we'll cut back in the training, we'll cut back in some of these areas, but we'll actually lose more money than we saved by far just in having inefficient contracts or having a system that we had fewer contractors even come in, so we had less competition and didn't save the money. The hard part is, again, this goes back to CBO can't score that. CBO can't score a savings of money over potential better training, better equipped. We know it will happen, but at the end of the day, when we're actually voting on a bill, they can't show that there's a savings there, that we know it's coming. So that comes with just education. We will have a hearing on it coming up in the next couple of months, continue pressing on this idea and start getting the word out and continue to find out what is the best alternative for it. Again, we don't want to create another whole new bureaucracy for training, but we do want to make sure that people that are in the system are well equipped.
The other issue you brought up a couple times was the idea of the right acquisition vehicles. There's been a proliferation of what they call the multiple award contracts, the IDIQ type contracts. OMB recently put out some guidance around trying to require business cases for these multiple award contracts. Is that what you're talking about when you say too many vehicles, which one's the right vehicle, or are you thinking more from a higher level?
It's both those. Here's my concern on it, and again, this is just an impression on it, that a contracting officer is going to do what's safe and what they know is going to work and where they've had previous people. If you continue to do multi-award, if you continue to pull out people that have done it in the past, you know it can get it done. It's the least amount of risk, and it's also the easiest. You don't have to do the greatest amount of paperwork. It may not be cheapest. It may not be best value. But it is faster, it is simpler, it gets it off their desk and gives you a chance to move on to the next thing. The challenge of it is, how do we start raising up subcontractors into prime contractors? We have to continue to raise up a new generation constantly of subs to primes, and we have to be able to get best value. And best value is not always going to be putting all of these things together. It may be simpler for the contracting officer, but it may not be best value for the taxpayer. That just takes additional work. So we need to be able to reward contracting officers for doing the additional work and provide some incentives for them to go around that, because that will save the taxpayer dollar at the end.
I want to jump over to suspension and debarment. Your subcommittee held a recent hearing around that issue. There's a recent report from OMB that was actually just posted online showing that the number of companies suspended or debarred in 2010 increased a great deal as compared to 29. Is this tool being used well enough? Is it underused? And what's your subcommittee looking at around suspension debarment and just more generally, maybe even just contractor oversight over the next few months?
It depends on the agency and whether it's being used enough. I mean, the reports that came back out to us from GAO, it's nice to be able to say there are additional suspensions and debarments, but you have other agencies that have not done a single suspension or debarment and have billions of dollars in contracts. While I would hope that everything is going so well that they have no bad actors in the process, I find that unlikely. They'll have zero suspensions or debarments because everybody is doing perfectly in the process. So it is well utilized in some agencies. It's not utilized in other agencies. And it's not difficult to be able to implement. It is a leadership from the top of that agency to assign personnel that's what they're going to track. If you don't have assigned personnel pursuing that, it's not going to happen because it's additional work for someone else. So you have to assign people. You have to walk through the process on it. It does help the taxpayer at the end significantly. And issues like what we're even dealing with on the floor with a 3% withholding assumes every contractor out there is a bad actor and they're not going to pay their taxes. I would rather not have a punishment for every single contractor, but instead go after the bad actors and to be able to eliminate that, go through the suspension and debarment, go through the process on that. Let's reform some people and pull them out of the system and move them from misbehavior to well-behaving because we need additional people bidding for this.
You guys are going to be looking at this idea of suspension and debarment in more detail. I know you just had the hearing recently. Are there other hearings, other GAO reports that are coming
up? We will follow up on that. For instance, HHS and DHS both have reports due to us by Christmas of this year on their changes that are happening with suspension and debarments. Obviously, FEMA has a long way to go on that. They are very active in taking that in. HHS, not so much. You know, they're one of the agencies that had not done suspensions and debarments. It is, as their statement during the hearing was, it is our intention to get this done. It's moving that from intention to actually accomplishing that. They have a tremendous number of contracts. They can do this. It's not too difficult. We just have to pay attention to it. And it will help everyone to see them on the suspension and debarment list so that other contracting officers can see the problems that are existing in other agencies and we don't continue to use bad actors over and over again.
Obviously, those two reports, you'll see where it takes you. You foresee another hearing. You foresee what?
I do foresee another hearing. And that would be in next year. It would not be in this year. It'd be in next year as we continue to press and to be able to follow up on that. As I mentioned before, it's not too difficult to do. It is a well-defined process, but it helps everyone to be able to go through it.